Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the MGEV Community Podcast, streaming live on Tuesday, the 20th of August, 2024. We're here to discuss MGEVs, hoping to inform and entertain you for up to an hour. I'm Leo Mindell, the same name on the forum. I live in Richmond, London, currently drive an MG5, and maybe one day a Cybster. Today, joining us, we have Tom Sedge. Tom, welcome.
Hi, Leo. Hi, I'm T. Sedge, Tom Sedge, T. Sedge on the forum, and I'm driving the MG4 trophy that you see behind me.
And also joining us from the Chorley Group MG England Innovation and Development Manager, Miles J. Roberts.
Hi, everyone. Miles Roberts, CG on the forum.
Thank you. And thank you for everybody that's joining us. If you're watching live, please tell us where you're watching us today and joining us from in the comments. That'll be really great so we can have a few shout outs. Please also add your comments and your suggestions and questions for us on the panel in that box. That'll be really great, and click on the live button. If you're watching later, thank you for choosing to watching the video, and please subscribe to get notifications when we're next live so you can ask your questions directly. Many thanks to our premium members, Big Bear, Eve Cog, Larger Baloo, MGBGT2ZS, Nuptar, Sloucher, Very Fat Boke, and Whiskery. If you like what we do here, please support us and become a premium member. Tonight, we're going to cover the topic that received the most number of votes on our recent surveys. And if you do want to vote for things that we cover, please carry on voting. But tonight, it's battery management techniques. And we will try and cover that, and then at the end we'll cover back to our normal news section. So, battery basics. We thought we'd start with the basics, try and break down some of those three-letter acronyms that cause everybody heartache where they go. They don't know what they mean and where they're going. So, we're going to start with how batteries work. And I'm going to throw this one straight to Tom to give us a little bit of a starting point.
Hi, Leo. Thanks. Yes, so don't worry, folks. I'm not going to blind you with science, but we'll quickly go through and explain a few basics, which will help you understand what's going on. So if we could have slide one up, please. So this first picture just gives you an idea of what a battery is. You've got a positive and a negative terminal, which I think most of you will probably be familiar with. There's fancy names. Engineers love to give fancy names to and long words to simple things. So don't worry about them being called anode or cathode. It just means negative or positive terminal. And then in the battery, we'll go in a little bit later into what those are made of, but inside the battery, there's usually an electrolyte. So in your, if you have a 12 volt car battery, which you'll have, for example, in your EV or ICE car, that electrolyte will be liquid and it will be an acid. That's what's used in 12 volt batteries. So typically liquid, but it can be other forms. We may talk more about that later. And that's used to help transfer something from the cathode to the anode and the anode to the cathode, which is what we're going to come on to talk about. And in the middle, there's a spacer, which is something non-conductive. Usually it's a polymer, a plastic, or something similar, or ceramic. And that is there to allow you to transfer the things from the left to the right and the right to the left, but to block the electrons, because the electrons are what causes the current flow, and you don't want your battery to short circuit. You want the electrons to flow out of the battery and power your car, power your devices, whatever it is that's connected to it. So that's the basic idea with the battery. If we go on to slide two, please, what this shows is that it's ions, something called ions, which is what we're actually interested in transferring between the anode and the cathode. And again, don't worry about that word. It just means what are the charged atoms that we're sending across from one side to the other. And what they are will depend on what kind of battery it is. So if you go back again to the old familiar 12-volt battery in your ICE car or EV, that is called a lead-acid battery because the ions that you're transferring there are lead ions. Okay, they go back and forth. And it's somewhat different in the batteries that we have in our EVs. And if we go on to slide three, why is it called a lithium ion battery? And all the batteries that everybody has currently in their EVs in all cars on the market at the moment are lithium ion batteries. That's because you have a lithium based cathode. So your positive terminal will be made out of lithium plus some other stuff. So lithium, you probably know, is a metal. and it has a number of discrete advantages. Lithium is used in EVs because it has very high energy density. You'll store a lot of energy in it. It doesn't weigh very much compared to the lead that's in your traditional car battery. So if you tried to make an EV as people used to, if anyone remembers the original GM electric car, that was had lead acid batteries in it, and it used to only go about 60 miles. If you try to use lead, it's very heavy and very bulky, and so you don't get very far, which is why people have switched to using lithium in modern batteries. So it's I say lightweight, it's high energy, and it can be rapidly charged and discharged, because it's also no good if your electric car takes a week to charge up, or if you can't get much power out of it, so that you can only toddle along at 10 miles an hour. So that's what a lithium ion battery looks like. Typically, the negative terminal, the anode, is made of graphite. There are other materials you may hear about, like silicon, which is supposed to be fantastic and coming along, but there are also problems with those. And generally, these days, the state of the art is a graphite anode of some sort. And that's essentially what you have in every lithium ion battery. Now, there are some downsides to having lithium. Does anybody remember their chemistry class where you might have had a demonstration either of lithium or sodium or potassium? And it was somewhat explosive and reactive. It's a highly reactive material. It can be highly combustible. And so that does cause a need to manage the battery and make sure the battery's temperature stays within reasonable limits. And this is the reason, a sort of an effect called thermal runaway, where the battery starts heating up, and because it heats up, because this is a chemical reaction that's going on here, then the reaction speeds up and generates more heat, and the heat increases. And that's why you can get a runaway, thermal runaway, which is what's behind when you will have seen the occasional, and it is very rare, picture of an EV that's on fire. It's
There was
typically the
an
battery that's on fire.
interesting article about that, Tom, that I saw today that said that there's been since 2010 511 thermal runaways globally.
Yes, and not
That's
made.
it.
It's very. And if you dig
That's
into stats,
absolutely the whole
it's very small compared
number
to.
around the world of the cars that have caught a light of thermal runaways have been 511, and there are at the moment
Absolutely.
they reckon 40 million EVs
Yes.
on the road.
Yeah. So it's a very small percentage. And I mean, people argue about how much less likely your EV is to catch fire. And it's somewhere between 20 and 50 times as generally thrown around. And there are some types of chemistry, some types of battery, as we'll go on to talk about later, which are less likely or more likely than others because of the way that they're made. And I'm hoping you'll understand that clearly by the end of tonight. So there are upsides and downsides, but in general, lithium's a wonder material. And if we ha hadn't invented lithium-ion batteries, we probably wouldn't have electric cars everywhere.
So you're saying that that's the big difference is because the pound per kilo or whatever you want to say,
It's weight
the
and
punch per
volume.
kilo is
Yeah,
so much better that we're able to get
so
cars that can run.
these are the two key things for batteries. How much does it weigh for a given amount of energy, which is your range, and how much volume does that take up? And your old lead acid batteries are huge and heavy. Well, we've got lead in them, but they've also got tons of liquid electrolyte typically. And anyone's ever taken one out of their car, they know they weigh a ton. And if your bottom of your vehicle where the battery pack is was made up of those, it would be like twice as high. Very, very heavy. You probably weigh an extra ton and only go probably 60 miles, which wouldn't be okay, but it wouldn't be a great vehicle. So this was the revolution that came along in batteries, and there are lots of types of lithium batteries. So the ones you have in your phone will be different from the ones you have in your car and other devices.
So there seems to be two types that we hear about for cars. Can you the LFP and then NMC? Can you explain
Yes.
what these two are?
Sure. Yeah. If we can put up slide four, please. This shows the real difference here. So don't worry about the chemistry. Don't get frightened by that. So both of these are just really talking about a different type of cathode. And you need to do things to the anode and the cathode. So it's not just the cathode that matters, but this is the key difference. So I'm simplifying here. So with an LFP battery, that stands for lithium iron phosphate. And it's and if you see it written as LiFePO4, that's the same thing. So if you see a battery with that and you see a battery with LFP, it is the same thing. It's just one is an abbreviation for the other. And so that's where materials are added to lithium, mixed in different proportions in order to improve the characteristics of the battery. For example, making it more stable. So one of the things that LFP batteries are noted for are they're extremely stable thermally. So they're very much less likely to have thermal runaway and potentially cause have a fire than other types of lithium battery, for example. Now, because it's got iron in it, then it's also quite heavy. So they have some downsides too. So you tend not to have huge batteries made of LFP at the moment because of the weight, and the volume is also somewhat bigger as well. But they are cheap. And so you'll often find an entry-level model, and this is what you'll see if you look at the MG range and other manufacturers. For example, I'll talk about the four because I know the MG4 best as I've got one. The bottom of the range of the MG4 is an LFP battery with 51 kilowatt hours of capacity. And then as you go up the range, you switch to NMC, which we'll talk about next. And there's a 64 kilowatt hour battery version and a 77 kilowatt hour battery version. And so LFP, cheap, simple, easy to make, safe. And it also has a lot of cycles. So you can charge and discharge and charge and discharge an LFP battery probably around twice as often, roughly, than you could an NMC battery in terms of its
So
lifespan.
the stat I heard about LFP batteries that from MG was that they anticipate they'll last about 3,000 cycles.
Yes.
Which, if you think of a battery as a full battery being, say, 200 miles on the MG standard range, MG4, it's basically 3,000 times 200 miles, so 600,000 miles. So, in terms of
It's
how long the
enormous.
battery is likely to last before significant degradation drops it below, say, 75%.
Yes.
So when we're looking at sort of, half a million miles is beyond the lifespan of most cars, most ICE cars, shall I say, most
Yes.
vehicles. I would say it's very edge case where they're even driven over 200,000 miles these days. So, the batteries are expected to outlast the cars quite considerably, and even at that point, if they've done 3,000 cycles, they are still useful and can be repurposed into, battery storage for solar devices and things. So,
Yes,
LFP
that's a really
is
good
really
point.
good long-standing technology.
Yeah, about all the types, so all modern battery types, anyone buying a car made in the last few years, certainly the last 5 years, it will last longer than the car will. Now,
Pretty
we
much
can
it.
talk later about how much you might see in terms of loss of range over that period, and that will depend on how far you drive and how you drive. But it's not a major concern for most people. Batteries are lasting a lot longer than everyone ever thought they would. And I've even some of you may have had even older cars like the Nissan Leaf, which doesn't have a thermally managed battery, so it's subject to higher degradation. But they go on for years and years and years. There's plenty of 10, 12-year-old ones running around, and they may have lost a bigger chunk of their capacity than you'd like, but they're still perfectly functional. So it's not a major issue for most people.
So you've talked about LFP, you've talked about
Yes, sorry.
NMC, and I'm sorry that we're using these three-letter acronyms, but everything ends up being that in a way. You've
Yes.
also talked about the difference between what is the
So let me
conventional
just
12-volt battery. Go,
shall I
yeah.
just finish off the NMC bit, and we can
Perfect.
finish with the slides. So NMC should be called LNMC. It is a lithium ion battery. Ion, not iron. Hopefully that's clear now. And that's short for lithium, nickel, manganese, cobalt oxide. It's just a different recipe of elements. And what are they good at? They have a lot of energy density, so you'll find them used in large battery packs for maximum range. They can give a lot of power as well. So that's another important factor. How fast can you get energy in and out? And so you'll find the highest charge rates and the highest performance discharge rates come with NMC batteries. That's why the high performance models of cars tend to have them. They cost a lot more to make. Some of the materials, like the cobalt, there's controversies about the mining and the conditions and the ethics. And they have a higher risk of a fire, although it's still extremely low. And I'll just add to the fire conversation. Most of the fire stats are cars that are being involved in accidents where the battery's actually been punctured or damaged in some way. These are not fires that just happen to occur because the car was left somewhere. If you look through the stats, the biggest groups are accidents and In a few cases, manufacturing defects where the cars were recalled. But that's mainly in the past now. So NMC is good for those things, principally. Sorry, Leo.
So we've had a couple of questions and a couple of comments from people out there, which I think is a good time to take it. One of them that I saw is that Dave Bell has added. I'm just seeing if I can see where Dave was coming from. No, I can't. Dave Bell has said he noted that LFP cells are lower voltage, hence a lower energy to mass volume. So that does make sense. Is that what you would agree with, Tom? So that probably also that always reminds me back to the good old days of rechargeable batteries were always 1 point something rather than 1.5. They were always slightly
Yeah, it
lower,
would be
weren't
like
they?
1.2 if you did your old nickel metal
1.2.
hydride rechargeables rather than
That's right.
1.5.
That's right.
So some devices would
And
struggle.
yeah. And Peter Urquhart, who's joined us from Hampshire, has thrown the first curveball straight to Miles. And he said, "Is there any word on MG UK giving a lifetime warranty on the battery?"
Not this time, although whether it's something they're due to, they might announce with new models that are being announced within the next few weeks and months. Stands to see. It would. I mean, it's a great marketing point.
To give clarification on that, there has been comments in other areas, other
Thailand, I
regions that
believe,
they've
has
already announced
launched
any.
a. I mean, the way that these warranties work, the lifetime warranty and everything else. It's basically it's funded by the manufacturer. It's an insurance policy, so it's. We can, they basically just decide how much they want to pay for the insurance to for any of these warranties. They could offer a 3-year warranty, a 5-year warranty. Nissan on most of its petrol cars offers a 3-year warranty, but they offer 5 years on the commercial range. The electric vehicles, they offer an 8-year warranty on the batteries. MG is 7 years currently in the UK. A lot of this is down to with MG, I think it's been that they wanted to have a consistent message across the whole range, a bit like Kia and Hyundai do. So to give it 7 years on everything is a f easier thing for A, it's an easy thing for salespeople to remember. It's an easy thing for customers to remember. And it's also it doesn't show any of their products in a worse light than others at a time when they still want to sell some combustion engine vehicles and things.
We should say with all these warranties, it's a number of years and a percentage at the end of that time, isn't it?
In terms of
That's the.
degradation, it is, yes.
Do you
Usually
know
it's
what the MG one is off the top of your head?
down to 75% after within 80,000 miles in 8 years.
So that's a really good way to segue onto the two questions I have that people always ask. I mean, the easiest one is state of charge, SOH. SOC. You see these on your reports. You see SOC, state of charge. As far as I'm concerned, that's what your current charge is, unless
Yes, that's
I'm
how
misunderstanding.
full is the battery right now?
And then the one that is seems to be you everybody wants to know it, and it's finding out what it is the state of health, the SOH.
So
So, Tom.
state of health, just briefly to clarify for people, that's how much of your battery's capacity compared to its brand new capacity still exists. So 100% means your battery has the full capacity it had when it was new. 50% would mean your battery has half the capacity left when it was new, which would be a big change. And we don't typically see drops of anything like that with MG cars on the forum.
So we've got a comment here from Mousy M said, recently sold my 9-year-old Leaf, 84% state of health
Well, there you
after
go.
9 years.
And that's without thermal management. So that battery will, I mean, basically when batteries get too hot or too cold and they get out of a happy range, damage can occur, and it's to do with the chemistry that's going on, the side effects of the reactions. And so, even with an unregulated battery like the Leaf has, that's still a pretty high percentage. I'd be pretty happy with that. No, it's not 100%. But what people forget is your ICE car is not 100% after 9 years either. In fact, I don't know if anyone remembers episodes of Top Gear where they test old supercars and things, and some of them
How many
had
horsepower
like
they've lost?
half the horsepower had gone that they originally had at the wheels. They test them on the
I
dyno,
thought you just poured in
and that
thicker
might be
oil, wasn't
excessive,
it?
but a lot of due to the wear and tear in the seals, the cylinders, and the rest of it, and the build up of deposits in the turbo not spinning very freely, ICE cars often lose a significant percentage. You can measure it as they get older, and it's just you don't notice it because it happens very slowly.
So, I mean, Thank you for the comments which are coming in. They're really good. Thank you. This is helping us on here. Bringing that back to what you've now covered about those different technologies, and I'm trying to compile a list in my head of what cars, which MGs, because we're on the MGs, what has what, and in there. So from what I can work out, the all of the extended, all the long ranges, etc., they're all now NMC. Is that right, Tom? Have I got that right? Or
Yes,
Miles?
Miles would know better than me, but
Yeah, so
high
just
performance will be an
so
MC.
basically the as a simple way, the original MG ZS EV, so the Mark One, that had an NMC battery, 44.5 kilowatt hour thereabouts. When we moved on to the MG5, the original 51 kilowatt hour battery, that was LFP, and then that same LFP battery was used in the standard range MG4 and the facelift MG ZS EV. Anything that's described now as standard range has got the LFP battery in it. Anything that's shown as extended range or long range, that's got NMC. The new Cyberster has got NMC battery as well. Interesting thing about the Cyberster battery is the battery pack, the configuration of cells is such that it's only 11 centimeters thick, so that's less than a Coke can height. So that's the sort of battery pack, underneath the car. So that means that effectively that's how, one of the ways in which they may be able to make a roadster and have it, so have the mass low down and also not have it so that you're riding high like an SUV as you are in most other new electric cars that are launched, because they're all launched on an SUV platform. So whilst obviously you've still got a depth there, 11 centimeters isn't much different to what you'd have when you think about having an exhaust running under your car. A muffler box would be, a couple of inches of a exhaust pipe running under the car. So it's not massively higher than normal roadster would be, and because it's a lot of weight low down, the it has the lowest center of gravity out of any sports car currently on sale, with the exception, I think, of Aston Martin's latest one. So it's really low center of gravity, and that obviously means that part of the test they had to do in China for the crash testing was doing a rollover test, and a bit like they had with the problem with Tesla in the first in the early days, they couldn't actually get it to roll over because the center of gravity was so low. So all that bodes really well for the Cyberster
So,
when it launches in the UK soon.
to bringing a few of those things together, we've had a really good question from Bernie Potterall, who's joining us from Bristol, North Bristol, and he has asked, "Can anyone recommend the best O, I never get it right,
Oh,
OBD2
DB,
app to enable
OBD2.
him?" I
Onboard
never get it right. You're
diagnostics
gonna
too.
onboard diagnostics 2 app to check for his battery state of health. What would you
So,
suggest here with Tom? Or
well,
Miles? Miles,
go
let's
on,
start with
Miles. Go
Miles.
for it.
The only thing I will say is to people is, and I found that having years of having Leafs and everything else as well, I find that sometimes getting obsessed by the data can actually be detrimental to your enjoyment of the vehicle. Somebody I know, people who've had a Nissan Leaf, and in the first 6 months it went from 100% to 99%, and they started a graph and they started plotting it, and it was, they're looking at the downward spiral and they're going, "Oh my God, it's dropped to," after 2 years it's gone to 97.6%. "Oh my God, it's speeding up the amount it's losing ranges. It's worse, it's worse, it's worse." Actually forgetting that, to be perfectly honest, like I say, with a normal petrol car, you wouldn't give two hoots about it, you wouldn't think about it whatsoever. And I said, "Well, look, in this case with the Leaf, you've got a, an 8 year warranty, 100,000 mile warranty on the battery. At the current rate, that it will degrade less than 80%. So on the current trajectory, you're going to hit like 92% in that 8 years. And what will that mean? Well, it means that, your range, rather than being 150 miles, will drop to 138 miles. It was
Making a
something
small
of nothing in a
difference,
way. And
yeah.
it's like, the difference that can be made by you accelerating a bit harder than usual, or decelerating, the actual, measurable difference is very,
And
very
lots
low.
and the weather conditions and the terrain. The other
So
thing to say is
let's come on to that in a minute. Let's just get, can we, if we get to Bernie's quick question here, and that Tom was, what app or what should he,
Well, I was
before
going
we get
to
to how to manage it, what should he
throw
measure it with?
I was going to throw it to you because I thought you'd just got one and talked about
Yeah,
it last time.
okay. All right. So I've done two. So it's a good question. I throw it back to myself. So car scanner, I've been using car scanner. There is an interesting thing here. So on my car, when I had my last service, it came off as 97%. When I put on car scanner, and when I've also put on a, come on, help me, a B,
ABR planner.
another,
A battery
sorry,
replan, yeah. ABRP.
a better route planner, a B
Yeah. Yeah,
RP,
that's the one.
which shows it to you as you're driving. Both of those come up at 96%. So it's coming up 95.5, 96% on there. But I mean, there was a comment on this, and I think it actually came from you, Tom. It's how do they work it out?
Well, yeah, so Dave Bell has made this point in the chat. You can't measure this. So it's not as if the battery, you've got basically a chemical reaction happening in the, as the battery ages. And as you actually cut it open and looked in there, and some researchers do make transparent cases for the battery so they can actually watch it. But unless you have that, you're not actually going to know how it's aged. So what you are seeing reported is the manufacturer's calculation. It's their calculation of what they think the state of health of the battery is. And there's no standard way of doing that. Every manufacturer does it differently. Then, in the case of NMC batteries specifically, you've also got a buffer, which is a reserved part of the battery pack you can't normally use. You may have wondered why you've got a 64 kilowatt hour pack, but you can only use 61 kilowatt hours with the long range MG4, for example. And that's because a little bit of the pack is reserved at the top, a little bit of the pack is reserved at the bottom. And that's used to protect the battery from discharging too much or from overcharging too much because the NMC is more prone to thermal runaway and it's more prone to damage because of being a highly charged or left in a high state of charge for a long time. But another effect of that is that the manufacturer can trade away those top and bottom buffers as the car ages in order to mask the fact that your battery is actually starting to perform slightly worse.
And
So the
this is the
real
graph
answer
that's
is
up
whatever the
there.
number you're getting, you don't really know what it means unless the manufacturer says how they calculated it. I mean, there was a fuss on the forum a while ago because LFP MG4s were reading 95% typically after a few months or 6 months to a year, and the NMCs were reading 100. But that is, as I say, could just be the way that's calculated. It could just be the fact, the effect of the buffer. And what we do know is that the LFPs should last longer, significantly longer than the NMCs for the unequal treatment. And they can take the abuse more if you really charge it up or rapid charge it a lot. But we know that both types have a very good longevity. There aren't people with, not just exclusive to MGs. Remember, these batteries are made by CATL and others who are, make them for a vast number of different manufacturers. And after many years, they're still performing at a high level. So it's typically something in the 90s is what people are seeing, or the very high 80s with a very, if you've done a taxi and you've done 200,000 miles, it's not dropping down to 60s, 50s, 40s. We're not talking about, range being cut in half, which I think a lot of people have fears about because some of the early EVs were a bit like that. They could have those problems, but that's the
I
old
think there's
technology we don't have.
two things on there, Tom. I've seen a
Yeah.
lot of people who are taxi drivers say, that you're seeing the 200,000 miles
Yes.
regularly now on EV cars. You're seeing this a lot.
Well, what's the most popular taxi at the moment? I see.
MG5. I it depends. If I stop at a traffic light, so
MG5.
sometimes people try and open the doors. The thing though that I think there's two points to mention very quickly on this at the same time. One is there was the EV survey that came out, the big one, and it asked that question, which I think as a consumer I would love to see, is that I would love to see on the MOT certificate a state of health. As a consumer buying a product, it's something that, and but I do appreciate you're saying exactly the same point, that it is calculated by what? Calculated by
Yeah,
who,
I think that
and we've
the
been
thing
down
for
that route before.
okay, so you're down to 95 earlier than you'd expect, but maybe it's going to stay at 95 for 3 years. I mean, we don't know yet with these LFP batteries because they're relatively haven't been out that long.
And the other thing I was going to mention on this, which is also interrelated to do with batteries, there was another survey that came out this week that I saw that commented that they've now been able to calculate the difference between the running costs or the servicing costs of EVs against ICE, And it's considerably different over 3 years. It's a considerably lower for EV cars, and they've only been able to do it now. They've got 500,000 cars in the database, and that was an interesting report. So I want to move this on because we've covered in great detail how and what where we are. We're all sitting there. We're all at 100% capacity. What do we do? What don't we do to keep that battery life either length of journey or actually long-term life? So I think that the two sort of interrelated subjects, which is how do you get the most out of the GOM on your car, and how do you get the best keep the state of health higher, or
Yep.
what do
Which
you want
one
to do?
do you want to talk about first?
Let's start with the general. How many miles can you get out of a drive,
Do you
and
want to take that,
what
Miles?
were the things that you would
Yeah, I'll
do?
do that. Yeah.
Miles, you've been driving many EV cars over the time.
Yeah. And I do about 25,000 miles a year as well, which is not a taxi driver mileage, but for someone who is supposed to be doing a job most of the time, it's quite a bit of driving. Yeah, I've been driving electric cars now for 9, 10 years. So I've got a fair bit of experience. And when I first started driving, it was a lot different experience because I was driving a Nissan Leaf, which had a useful range of about 60 miles in winter and around 80 miles in summer if you drive it carefully. Some of the advice which was given to those early EV owners is perhaps not quite so valid anymore because when I was in a Nissan Leaf, if it was winter, I would literally, and I wanted to do a long journey, I would literally have to turn the heating off, put the heated seats on, put a coat on, put gloves on, keep myself as warm as possible whilst basically not using any of the heating for the car, drive at 55 miles an hour on the motorway, and still, I might just about be able to eke it towards 80 miles if I was really careful. But now with car batteries, with the capacity of the battery on the initial original Leaf was a useful capacity of about 20.5 kilowatt hours. And when you got down to, 10%, it was only sort of 7 or 8 miles left. Whereas now, if you're in a long range MG ZSEV with a 77 kilowatt hour battery, you're going to be, having sort of 300 miles range, and 10% left is still 30 odd miles, which is half of what I had in the Leaf to start off with. So the sort of fear of driving and running out, I think, has dropped quite a lot, and the number of charges has increased. So it is, I'm edging more after this, lengthy period of driving EVs that actually the way you drive a car, I do try and drive e-car. I keep the speed limits, but I do tend to use speed adjusting cruise control on the motorway because I find it a lot easier. I put the air conditioning on because I like being comfortable. I'll preheat the car if it's frozen up and I don't want to be standing there scratching the windows, but I don't bother preheating the car as a rule otherwise. I tend to drive in eco mode just because I find that it's slightly less responsible on throttle, and as a lazy driver that suits me better. But in winter, obviously the eco mode reduces the power of the climate control, and I'd rather be able to see where I'm going, so I do tend to turn off the eco mode in winter if I'm finding a problem with misting up. But all that thing, it's just basically if you. I was doing a car show recently. I stood next to an MG4 XPENG, and somebody was saying to me, how far would it go? And I said, well, it depends how you drive it, but around sort of 200 miles ish, day to day, before you start panicking. He was like, yeah, but what happens if you turn the heater on and turn the radio and the lights on? Does it just drop to half? And I was trying to explain to him that, the radio has, 4 40-watt speakers, I think it is. So you can crank that up to maximum. That's going to make sod all use of the battery. The lights are LEDs. They use sod all as well. But if you put your foot on the accelerator a little bit harder, rather than using 20 kilowatts of power to tickle you on at 65 miles an hour, if you put your foot down and do 90, it's going to suddenly be using perhaps, 70 or 80 kilowatts of power to do that faster speed.
I think that, I think
I worked
that's
it out once that I could
yeah.
spend a week in living in my car with the air conditioning on and the lights on before it ran out. So if I was in a traffic jam, because that's a classic thing in a traffic jam, ICE cars would say, "Oh, worried about your battery?" You go, "No, I mean, I can last
So you're
miles longer than
not.
you."
No,
I think.
there was quite a lot of posts last year in Facebook of people in the snow in America
Exactly.
worrying about it. It's like, well, they could sit there for 3 days in their Tesla with it with the with, with you're not going to last 3 days
They've got
on
camping
your ICE
mode in
car.
Tesla as well, so you don't even have
So
to try and keep the car active, which you do on
and
some.
I think from my perspective, I'll come to you, Tom, in a second, but from my perspective, I actually mirror exactly what Miles has said here. For, I find the biggest single change, and I think it's the biggest change to my driving since I've moved to an EV, is I've dropped 65 miles an hour on a motorway, and I've clicked it on and I've hit 65, when in the past I probably would be more around 70 or something, 70 plus. I would, without, on cruise control, because I think it has made a difference. It hasn't made a difference, but that's probably my biggest change to how I drive on there. Tom?
Well, yeah, I mean, I did do that. I mean, I've kind of gone back to driving at whatever, 70, because I realized that actually I've got enough. The only thing that matters is if I got enough range to get to my next stop or where I'm next going to charge up. And I was repeatedly getting to charges with 30 something percent left. And that's quite a lot that I'm not using if I'm always getting there with 30 odd percent. So now I tend to go at 70 and I get there with 20% or 15 or 18. And I'm maybe not as brave as some on the forum who are very gleeful about getting down to 2% or 4%. And,
I
kudos to
don't think I
them.
could do that.
I'm a bit scared
Yeah.
of that because we live on a big hill. And if I couldn't get enough power out of the battery, wouldn't I actually get up it? But I'm much more confident than I used to be. So now I'm thinking, unless it's really tight and I'm really trying to squeeze for having one stop only or trying to get home to charge because it's cheaper overnight because I've got a home charger, that I'm not really keeping the speed down anymore. But it does make a big difference.
I think one of the things, and I mean, it's fascinating to have Miles here because he has been driving EVs for a lot longer than most people have. So you've got that experience and you've seen all the different types. But I think it is a thing that we've all come across in the past. It's the brain power of, like, can we do this? Can this car last? As some of you may know, I'm on a journey at the moment. I'm driving through Europe. We're probably going to cover it on another podcast. But I've been using the ABRP app, and I've been able to literally say I'm going from here to here, and I've told it what my car, and well, it reads from the car. This is fabulous for me. It reads from the car how much I've got charge. I tell it what I want to end up at. I always tell it about 20%. I'm not interested in arriving with, fumes.
Three.
And it will tell me how long I have to charge for. And invariably, I've gone, well, I think it's about lunchtime anyway. And so far on this journey, with the exception of one thing, which I'll cover another time, I've been able to fill that time with either we stopped at shopping or we stopped at lunch. And I had the car was ready before I was ready.
Oh, I've
And I
always found
turned
that.
up
I
with.
always find that. This is the thing
We
about
turned up exactly,
fast
with a fast
charging.
charging.
For me, the obsession with charging speed is a mistake. I initially thought, oh, well, a trophy that's got a faster charge rate than the standard range, right? The long range standard range. But actually, you only get that for a small part of the curve at the beginning. That's one thing. So as it charges up, it drops off. But the other thing is, I take quite a lot of time these days, as I'm not as young as I used to be. I want to go in and have something to eat. I want to go to the loo. I want to just de-stress from the last leg of the journey. And I keep coming back and thinking, actually, I don't need it to be at 90% or 92% or whatever it's got to. And I would actually quite like the option to charge a bit more slowly sometimes. So unless I mean, I get it if you're commuting and if your job is
I
driving, and
agree.
I get that, but that's such a small percentage of people these days that I think this obsession with maximum charge rate is not. I mean, I don't know who it's trying to prove what to, but it's because we're used to petrol and diesel being so quick, not because we need it.
So
One thing that's
I'm going to ask you
often.
about, maybe I can ask this one to Miles on here. There's the difference of charging, because there is that DC charging to AC charging. Does it make any difference to the battery, Miles? Does it also, Is there any thoughts about that long term? Should you be using more of one or more of the other, and the speed that it charges?
Yeah, okay. So with AC charging, you put the power in, let's say AC electric comes from the grid, it goes into an onboard charger, and that converts it from AC electric to DC. It also volts it. So if it's 240 volts coming out of the charger, it's going to put it into 400 volts-ish to go into your battery in the car, DC. So that conversion happens in your car, and most onboard chargers on the electric cars that MG currently sells are 7 kilowatts, which is single phase electricity, 32 amps. And that means that it can put a maximum 7 kilowatt hours per hour, which is 7 kilowatts, into the car. So if you've got a 64 kilowatt hour battery, that's going to take roughly sort of 9 hours ish to charge up, 9 and a half. DC chargers using CCS. CCS2, as it's called. That plug uses the two DC pins at the bottom. So that's basically plus and minus. That's going directly to the battery. The big charger itself is what converts it to DC. So it's pumping it directly into the battery at the voltage that the battery needs requires. And because the cable is a lot thicker and heavier, it's able to carry a lot higher current. So you typically see sort of 400 volts going in at perhaps 150, 200 amps, depending on what the car is, what the charger is. Now, DC charging is typically limited by the speed at which the car can charge, or which the charger can provide. So some of the older chargers are only 50 kilowatts capable. And that's down to obviously the amperage and volts that they can supply, but also it's limited by the car end of it. So the car battery typically on a normal, particularly something like the original Leaf, that sort of battery technology was limited to 2C charging. Now, to explain what that is, 1C basically means that you can charge that entire battery capacity in 1 hour. 2C means it can do it in half an hour. So, or it can do double the capacity of the battery in an hour. So, if it was a 24 kilowatt hour battery, say in the Leaf, it peaked out around 48 kilowatts charge rate. As batteries have become bigger, that 2C charge rate has been quite useful because it obviously, as the battery gets bigger, if you've got a 60 kilowatt hour battery, that means it can charge at 120 kilowatts peak typically. Now, there are some improvements being made to battery technology and to the chemistry and to the cooling and everything. And some cars have moved on to an 800 volt architecture, which enables it to charge faster. And so we see more like sort of 4C charging on those. So on, for example, my Hyundai IONIQ 5 I'm driving at the moment, that's got 800 volt charging. So if I can connect it to a really fast charger, it can charge at like 300 kilowatts despite being a 77 kilowatt hour battery. So DC rapid charging is very, very good at getting a lot of charging quickly. The limitations with DC charging is that it's a bit like trying to fill a barrel with a fireman's hose. Initially, you can throw it in very quickly, but you need to keep turning the tap down as it gets close to the top because otherwise, the risk it could overflow. So, with DC rapid charging, you're throwing the power in really, really fast when the battery's empty. When it gets above half full, you might have to turn the tap down a little bit. And then, when it gets up to 80, 90%, it gets to the point where you have to turn it down to a trickle. And at 99%, it's going to be drip, drip, dripping in so that it doesn't overflow. So,
In fact,
DC
often cuts off
charging.
before that, doesn't it? Therefore, they cut off at 96,
Yeah,
97. Yeah.
I found the ones in Europe, when I left it on, they cut off at 97, then wouldn't go any higher.
Often
That's it,
they'll
they
put in some
cut.
sense that if the charge rate drops below a certain kilowatt, so if it drops, say, below 12 kilowatts, they'll just go, oh, sod it, it must be nearly full. Now, the thing
Go
about.
away and free up the socket.
Yeah. The thing is with DC charging is that obviously it's very good at quickly charging the battery. It does generate a fair bit of heat, and that's why having a thermally controlled battery like you have in the MGs is useful, because on the old Nissan Leafs it used to overheat the batteries after a few journeys. I did a trip to London and back,
So
and
one of the things I noticed One of the things I noticed with that, Miles, is when I was DC charging, you're hearing the sound of the fans running, sort of like you used to hear when you have an ice car and you'd stopped after a long journey and you'd hear the fans running to keep the co cooling the car down. So you're hearing that noise that it's almost it's funny. It kicks in straight away on the DC charging when I was in France. So it was quite warm and it kicked in straight away. So it's almost like you knew the car was charging.
Yeah, that's incidentally why the car has you might have noticed it's got two reservoirs. One's for battery cooling or heating, and one is for motor. Because they need different temperatures at different times, depending on what's going on. But yes, that will kick in. It's worth saying that there'll be a lot of people have a lot of fears about that rapid charging damaging the car. That can't happen because the car is in control of how much charge, what the charge rate is. The car tells the charger how much to give it, and the car can say stop whenever it wants.
Which I
It is
suppose
true that
also.
if you constantly rapidly
Sorry.
charged your car, you're stressing the battery more than if you always charge at home on your 7 kilowatts. That's true, but that's going to only show up over a long period of time. And there are plenty of stories of people who've done a lot of that with modern EVs, where it hasn't been a big issue, whereas with the older EVs, it perhaps was an issue as they would overheat.
I think
Sorry,
just one thing to add to that as well is when you're DC charging, because it doesn't actually get to 100% properly on those,
Leo.
or very rarely it will ever get to 100%, it doesn't do any battery balancing. So battery
Yes,
balancing
we should talk
is
about
one
that
thing,
and
which is one thing
calibration.
which, so battery balancing is basically, if you think of all of the cells, because although we've shown you obviously these diagrams of a lithium-ion battery as being one cell, the truth is that an electric car battery is perhaps made up of 200 cells. And so each of those cells will be around 2 volts. And you're going to be putting a lot of power into this battery, and it's going to be bringing up the voltage in each of these cells. But it won't, it's a bit like putting a ice cube tray under a running tap. They're not all going to be filled at exactly the same time, at exactly the same rate, because you're filling it effectively in at one end where the cables come into the battery, and there will be some wires taking it around to the other cells, but it's maybe not this, all on the same path length. So some of these cells will get slightly higher voltage than others. And so battery balancing is where the battery then conditions itself by shunting some power from the lower powered from the higher powered cells to the lower powered cells. Or what it typically does on the MG system is that it basically puts a resistor across those that are higher and then uses the EV charger on AC to bring up the voltage on the lower cells. By doing this, it means that the cell voltages can be equal across the thing. What you don't, you, the battery is only as good as the lowest cell. We've seen with some other EVs, like Nissan Leafs in the past, where one cell is perhaps half a volt less than the
One
rest of
bad
them,
cell, yeah.
and it's one bad cell, and effectively it can stop the range because as you're driving along, the car's basically going, okay, well, this one cell has dropped to 1.3 volts or whatever, that's way too low. I'm going to therefore stop the car. So you might have a battery that's the rest of the cells are all at 75%, but this one's down at 20, and that's what screws it over. So
is it practical to will it be is it practical to replace individual cells on a battery? I mean,
Depends on the
how
battery, depends how the battery's made. I mean, on older batteries, it tends to be easier because they were made in lower volumes and more manually. And some of the Tesla batteries are almost, they just throw away some of the latest ones because of the way they're made. They're not made to be serviced. So it all depends on who made your battery. Remember, it's not MG making the batteries here, it's CATL and other groups. I mean, the Chinese are the experts at making this. So it's typically Chinese, unless it's Tesla in the States or a few other people. So it really depends. But there's a growing market in secondhand battery repair, where you take it to a dealer and they'll say, well, it needs a new battery pack, which should be a lot of money traditionally, although it's coming down because battery prices are dropping a lot. And the repair shops can may be willing to take it apart and replace the cell that's poor, and they can get a replacement for that. And then you've got a battery that works again. So people do that with Leafs, for example, and other
brilliant.
electric cars that are popular. But it does depend if it's practical. And obviously, you need the right equipment. You need to be high voltages are involved. Safety precautions. It's not something you should tempt yourself.
So going back to Miles, you were talking about conditioning the battery. How often would you say is the recommended, or what would you say is from your own experience is the you should you be conditioning your car using the AC charge.
So it depends on the mileage you're doing, to be perfectly honest. It depends, if you're only driving, doing 200 miles a month, I'd say they do, one full charge a month. That's fine. But if you're, if you're doing, I don't know, 2,000 miles a week, you're probably going to need to do a battery balance probably slightly more frequently. I usually say that with terms of battery balancing, speak to taxi drivers, and often a lot of those are, rapid charge 3, 4 times a day, and they might not have off-road parking at home, so doing an AC charge isn't practical a lot of the time for them. So I'd say if you're doing that, if you can do one battery balance a month, whether that's taking it to, getting it charged on a rapid charger to 90% and then taking it to the pod points at Tesco's or whatever it is to do the battery balance for another hour or so afterwards, that would be better if you could. Or if you do actually get yourself a day off, then, if the car can be put on a balance that day, that'd be great. It's basically the more often you can do a battery balance, the better. Having said that, with an NMC battery pack, it's not ideal to keep the battery at 100% state of charge. LFP batteries don't mind being 100%. You can charge them to 100% every single day, and there won't be any noticeable degradation. But with NMCs, typically, they don't like being much lower than 10% state of charge. They don't like being kept at high states of charge for long periods of time. So if you're going away on a holiday, for example, the recommendation would be trying to leave the battery with somewhere between 20 and 80% SOC, rather than leaving it full. So there are some services at airports where they will charge your car battery for you. If you've got an EV, you can park in a long stay car park, put your battery on charge. Probably best not to do that, just for the purpose of battery degradation purposes, unless it's an LFP. Because if it's an NMC and it's fully charged after day one and you're away for 2 weeks in Canada, then you're not going to be able to discharge that battery, and it's going to potentially do some degradation.
It's worth
So
explaining
I have one
that
other.
the
Yeah,
so
go on,
I was
Tom.
going to say it's worth explaining that the reason that that degradation happens high up is that between the 80 and 100%, you get a higher voltage, you get up to the peak of the voltage curve. The battery is therefore storing more energy. And you will therefore get accelerated growth of various problems that can occur with the chemistry. It's the limitations of the kind of state of the art, which slowly degrade the battery. So if you leave it at a high, the higher the state of the charge you leave it, the faster that process happens. Now, it's not like it happens overnight. We're talking weeks, months, or longer. But if you repeatedly left your car, your NMC battery at 100%,
When you
that
say
would be a
repeatedly,
path.
how many?
Well, if you left it for months and did that as a habit,
Okay.
then you might see a much faster reduction
Got
in
you.
the state of health. And if you did it continuously, you can destroy a battery quite quickly doing that. But it's very difficult to do that without actually driving it. If you're driving it, you're taking it below 100%. But it's so people shouldn't worry about should I ever charge to 100% overnight. Of course, you should do it whenever you need to do a long journey, and it doesn't matter if you do it the night before and then drive the next day. That's not what we're talking about. But don't, if you're planning on a gap year, don't leave it at 100%.
Okay, so what you're saying is it's fine if you're don't worry about the fact you're charging it to 100% and you're driving it tomorrow morning. What you
That's
don't want to
fine.
be doing is drive it to 100% and leaving it there for 3 weeks
Yes,
and
don't
then
think
driving
the
it.
good thing with your battery is to leave it full unless you have LFP. If you have LFP, that's fine.
So before we move on to our general, news updates and any other points, I had one more question which also I wanted to ask, Miles. We've talked in the past about the GOM and dropping down to lower and then going back up to, I think one of the times before you talked about 5% to sort of reset the it it's it it's
The memory
its
effect of it almost,
calculations.
isn't it?
What can you remind us? Sorry, what, sorry?
So with some, again, it's probably less relevant with LFP now, but with some batteries, with the battery management software, the BMS, was finding it difficult to calculate the battery size effectively, because it's what's happening is that it's you're driving it for 30 miles and then you're plugging it back in again, and it's basically not seeing the full battery. It's just seeing, a small proportion of it. And so it's doing calculations based on a very small drop. So if you wanted to assist the BMS, then yeah, you could do a fairly low drop down and then a re and then a charge all the way to full and leave it to balance for ages. And that will
And
effectively allow it to
there is
reset
a
it.
recommendation that MG has issued on that. So this is around calibrating the batteries generally, which is to do 10 to 100%, to drop to 10% and charge all the way back up to 100% in a single go every 3 to 6 months as a general suggestion. And that's exactly for that. That's so the battery can calibrate what does low look like, what does high look like. As the battery ages, the available range of voltages changes, so it needs to recalibrate. And as Miles says, LFP batteries have a much smaller range of voltages, so they're much more sensitive to this. And that's interesting because I don't think that recommendation appeared when I first got my four, but it's definitely come out
I
this
think
year and been issued. And so there are this there's this 80 between 20 and 80 recommendation. Don't go too low too often. Don't go too high too often. And then there's this 10 to 100 recommendation, as well as the 100% for balancing that people may want to think about.
this we've come to a nice point on this conversation, because what we've shown is that the technology that we're all interested in, the technology has moved forward, the understanding of the technology has moved forward, the good practices change. But I think also what we're seeing is the concerns, while they were strong in the past, and you mentioned it, Miles, when you were driving your Leaf, you could only go so far with it. You're now seeing less and less of this in the real world, being, you're still going to get a picture of somebody running out of electrons halfway along a motorway. You're still going to see it because people want to report it. But it is generally what the reliability and the factor of how the battery works, even as we're seeing 200,000 miles on a car, and we're getting that longer, that these batteries are lasting. And
Absolutely.
it's a great experience. I want to move the quick. We're running out of time. We've had some really interesting conversations. Tom, you've been having quite a long chat on the chat at the same time with everybody. Thank you for answering all the questions that they've been throwing out there. Hopefully, we've covered all those bits on there as well. Miles, is there any quick bits of news you wanted to cover that you've heard in the last couple of weeks since we last met?
Just to say that MG has put out a teaser today on its website saying that the new MG ZS is going to be unveiled next Wednesday, the 28th of August. One thing to point out of this, it will be a new hybrid plus drivetrain, so similar to what we've seen in the new MG3. This is going to mark the first point at which the MG ZS separates from the MG ZS EV as we know it. So the MG ZS EV replacement won't be looking the same as the MG ZS that is going to be announced next week. There is going to be a C segment crossover SUV sort of EV product, which is going to be built on is a similar size to what the MG ZS EV is now, but it's going to be based on the MG4 architecture. And so
This
because of
is
that, it's
the
going to
S5 as it's branded in China, but probably won't be here. Is that right?
So it's basically going to be making that it's no longer going to look like the petrol version, the ICE version, which is good news for EVs because it means it's got EV architecture underneath it. It's therefore not compromised. So we should see the new hybrid MG ZS next week, and then the electric version we unveiled, I think, a couple of months later down the line.
And do we know what they'll call it? Whether they'll call them both call them ZS, or have we no idea yet?
The new ZS will be called ZS. The new
Okay.
electric crossover may not be called ZS.
Right.
In fact,
But
probably won't be called ZS.
I think somebody corrected me on the forum. It probably won't be called S5 because of Audi.
Oh, and sorry, just in the chat. So I was just saying 2 volts times 200 just for simple maths. That was, don't want to get too technical on it.
I think it's amazing that we're really, again, I'd like to thank everybody for their comments that they've put in here. So just wrapping up, thank you for the voting on this subject. We hope we cover this subject and give you some information. I've given you nothing, but the guys with technology and brains have given you something to talk about. Please vote again on any poll on the polls to decide what you want us to cover in the future. A link to the poll is in the video description. A reminder, we do want other people to join. I'm fairly new to this, as you will know, but that we want other people who drive these cars to get involved. We're going to be talking about one of the things will be people who do long distances, and I'm going to be covering my road trip. I'd love other people who do road trips to be coming on, so you don't have to hear my voice too often. Please reply in the podcast threads of anything that you want, and the link in the description is there about everything that we're going to cover. You can find an audio version of this podcast on all good podcast providers. If you just search for MGEVs in the community podcast. That's it for tonight for the podcast. Many thanks to the volunteer moderators who keep the forums running smoothly, ALB, Colm and Rolf. And many thanks to Stuart, who's sitting behind us, shouting at us and telling us to get it right. He gets it all right, we get it wrong. And I'd love to thank very much to both to Tom and to Miles for their input tonight. It's been brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Leo.
If you found this podcast useful, please click on the like button. And also, if you subscribe and click on notification, you'll get a notified when we go live, which is really useful for us just in case we have to change the time. We'll be back very soon, and hope you all enjoy yourself. Bye.